And good morning, everyone. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and I'd like to thank you for joining the Public Health Data Systems Task Force. All task force meetings are open to the public, and your feedback is always welcomed, either in the Zoom chat or during the public comment period that is scheduled about 11:50 Eastern time this morning. And on behalf of ONC, I would like to express our deep appreciation to the task force members who have volunteered their time and expertise. And today we also have a couple of guest presenters with us, and I'd like to thank them for participating. I'm going to begin roll call of our task force members. So when I call your name, please indicate that you are here. And I'll start with our co-chairs, Jillian Haney.
Present.
Arian Malik.
Good morning.
Rochelle Bolton.
Present.
Hans Bootendijk.
Good morning.
Heather Cook Sinclair.
Here.
Aaron Holt Coyne.
Good morning.
Charles Cross.
Here. Thank you.
Stephen Eichner.
Good morning.
Joe Gibson.
Good morning.
Raj Gavarti.
Good morning.
Tim Gerges. John Kansky.
Good morning.
Bryant Thomas Karras. Stephen Lane.
Morning.
Jennifer Layden.
Hi, good morning. No conflict.
Leslie Leonard.
Good morning.
Hung Lu is not able to be with us today, but should be back next week. Mark Maroska.
Good morning.
Aaron Meary. Alex Muggy.
Morning.
Stephen Murphy.
Good morning.
Elia Oliveira.
Good morning.
Jamie Pina.
Present. Good morning.
Abby Sears.
Good morning.
Vivian Singletary.
Good morning.
Bill Sutherland.
Good morning.
And Cheryl Turney. All right. Thank you so much, everyone. Now, please join me in welcoming Arian and Jillian for their opening remarks.
Thank you, and welcome to the second meeting today. I am really pleased with that we're going to be beginning the review of the F criteria with immunizations. Today, we're going to be hearing from subject matter expertise from both state and local territories, as well as from one of the healthcare providers. And that'll be followed by a review of the work that ERA's been doing in recent years to encourage voluntary engagement with their measurement and improvement initiative that seeks to align and improve, provide alignment with functional standards and data quality for immunization information systems. And I think that these presentations will provide us with a really good foundation for discussions about potential ideas around certification, as well as be able to frame some of the work that's already being done and look to lessons learned. So I will turn it over to you, Arian, if you'd like to give some opening remarks, and then we'll get into the presentations.
No, let's get into it. Very exciting, as you said, to look at an area that we've made a lot of progress in and look at whether we can accelerate that going forward. Shall we go to the panel session? So we're going to change on the fly. So we're going to start with Hans and then go to Aaron and then go to Mary Beth. So Hans and Aaron represent, if you will, the pitchers and the catchers in this immunization data flow. And then the ERA work represents the public-private coordination work to both improve standards as well as improve operational guidance and otherwise improve data flows for immunization. And you know, clearly we've had a lot of practice at getting immunization right over the past few years. So a good opportunity to do a look back and assess what's been working and where there's opportunity for improvement. So with no further ado, We're going to turn it over to Hans to represent the sender side. Although for immunization, we have both the transmission as well as the query. So each of the actors has both a send and a transmit function. So Hans, over to you.
All right, thank you. I'll try to run back and forth between pitcher and catcher somewhere. I think it's 11 feet, whatever it is, yards. Thank you for this opportunity. And in preparation of the question, reaching out to give an update, reached out to fellow members at EHRA to get a sense of what are some of the key challenges, opportunities, where have we gotten to. So I want to first, on the next slide, acknowledge that we have made substantial progress. That doesn't mean that we are where we want to be or need to be, but if we look at the number of aspects of it, registry participation, connections, coverage that are in place, substantial progress has been made, and data completeness is improving and enhancing, as well as data quality. A lot of work that in part by the pandemic has been accelerated. It attained more focus to move forward in that direction, and the achievements made, as well as the foundation that had been laid before that that could be built on. So and that has been a team sport with everybody involved. And Mary Beth Carrillo can surely give quite a few of the statistics of where we're at, the work that has been done, others with IIP. Lots of thanks and for the work that has been done there. We also see increased bidirectional exchange. One of the areas that we have seen uptake and use is in the queries to get information back, but that has also identified some challenges that we'll get to. So a lot that we can look at that has moved forward, has made good progress. On the next slide, and that's where I'm going to spend most of the remaining time, is on some of the challenges and opportunities that we have around the questions. when we look at some of the challenges, variations exist among registries on the data they need, and some of the variations on how they like to have that. And with COVID, something that we have seen with electronic report, lab reporting as well, has occurred here, is that there are additional data that is required, that is of interest, that is not always necessarily directly related to the vaccine at hand, and the reporting of that, but provides further context. And that's something that everybody then has to react to. And not everybody asks for the same information in the same way. Data quality is still an area to work on, to ensure that as best as possible, the data collected and gathered is complete, accurate, and can be used, et cetera. So there is still work to be done, but what we have seen, and we have met with stakeholders throughout the last couple of years, and we have seen improvements there, but we also believe that more can be done in that space. Vaccine updates have been at a high pace, high flurry. We are constantly getting new updates on what's about to come. And that is actually interesting, is that we have learned with EHRA and the CDC and ERA on the calls and others, is that getting frequent and constant updates that helps us either be prepared, aware, or otherwise. So, but it has created challenges to keep up with it, and how can we settle that into a new cadence? There has been a need that arose for bulk queries. Some of the workflows for different providers, different contexts, instead of doing one patient at a time, that works for many situations. There are some areas where for some of our members, it was clear that getting data in query in bulk has advantages, and that's what's identified as well. Created some challenges along the way. And all throughout, no matter where we talk interoperability, patient matching, particularly whatever kind of query it is, if we're trying to get information back on patients, whether it goes in or out, how do we make sure that the data that we provide and that registries have, that that can be matched up? And when we get information back from the registries, that we can do that as well, because the patient may have been in different places. So that continues to be a challenge. So some of the opportunities that we are looking at and have been discussing is around certification alignment. Certification is typically on one side of the exchange, but we believe that with aligning certification further, better on both sides, that has that opportunity to further synchronize and make the areas consistent where they can be and flow through that. We can also look at in some areas, maybe it doesn't stand out as much as the lab reporting, but data that is not directly related to the immunizations. Are there opportunities that if the data already flows other ways that that can be taken advantage of? That might not be immediately an interoperability challenge only, but in how can the variety of public health data points, how can they further take advantage of the data that they already receive through the different channels. Opportunity is that work in progress with Helios around bulk queries to address those needs in that area. And then how do we have the opportunity ties back to a potentially certification as well, that we put effort around getting data out. When we get it back in, ensuring that it's fully ingested and reconciled with all the other information, which then goes back to some of the challenges. How do we need to make sure that we match it to the right patients, et cetera, et cetera. So there are areas in here that we can enhance, improve upon. Certification is certainly one of the components that that can contribute to that. And surely we're going to talk further about that on how to take advantage of it and keep that manageable. It comes with overhead in many ways, but so we need to be cautious and careful on applying in the areas that truly need it, and don't overburden where it's not necessary based on experience today. So I'm going to stop there. I think I'm close to 5 minutes.
If you count six as five, that was fantastic. So much information. Aaron, we will turn it over to you to give the catcher's side, although in immunization, as I said, all catchers are senders as well.
Great. Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
We got you.
Awesome. So thank you. I'm Aaron Behringer. I work with the Minnesota Department of Health. You can actually probably skip ahead 2 slides. I probably don't need a slide to tell you about the things we're going to talk about. I only have 5 minutes here. So really 3 slides. Sorry, go back one more. So today I want to try and tell you a little bit of a story about where we're at in Minnesota with immunization messaging. The guide that came out in late 2014, the newest version of HL7, we adopted pretty early on. We were fairly early adopters. We had it in place by the end of 2016. With that work, that was being pushed really hard from the promoting interoperability, or at the time it was called meaningful use side of things, where you know, providers were getting money to use 2015 certified EHR technology, and that was part of their requirements, was to use this format. So it was really, you know, we had pressure to have this in place and ready, and they had pressure to use it. So when we started up, it was unfortunately like one business person and one developer who had to go through a 410-page document and figure out how, you know, our state laws and policies applied to that document and try to implement it. So we thought we did a pretty good job. It turned out we were off standard in some places unintentionally, and that we didn't know it. What we learned as we started to connect with groups was that the 2015 cert, it certified the system, but not the use of the system. So we were getting like really variable messages coming out of providers, even though they were all certified. And they weren't on standard. And so we were sort of having a lot of conversations with people and finding a lot of one-off problems. And then they would fix their messages and we would make slight changes in our system, but it was a lot of like one-off fixes. And the bulk, the lion's share of the work was being done on the provider side to fix their systems to meet our needs. Better tooling comes along. So this is the stuff that Mary Beth is going to talk about next with the M&I project, the ARCH tool, and the ability to do some like really good testing of IIS. So better tooling came along and we started to use that to look at our system. And we found out, oh, wow, we're actually off standard in quite a few areas that we that nobody had recognized. And so we were like, okay, this is something we need to fix. And we started to attempt to make really big changes to our interface. The problem with that is we started communicating that out to our providers and our partners and saying, hey, we're going to make all these changes to our interface because we want to be on standard to make this easier for everyone. And we got a lot of pushback saying, whoa, 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 we did a bunch of work to go off standard to meet your needs. Now, if you go on standard, it's going to break our interface and we're going to have to spend a bunch of time and energy to get back on standard. So we had to kind of step back, reevaluate, and we decided what we're going to do is build a second endpoint. So we're going to leave the existing one alone, let people use it, don't interrupt that, build a second one that's on standard, and then onboard people to that, new providers, and as there's interest from existing providers, move over to the new one. It's on standard. It's going to be easier to work with. We started building that and then COVID happened. all resources went into a pandemic response. We stopped working on the new interface. They started coming back. Monkeypox is happening. So they've been pulled away again a little bit. We've also been in, you know, pandemic response for so long that we have a bunch of like structural infrastructure security type work that we have to do. So we don't currently have plans to pick up the new endpoint work and finish it. Like, it's really unfortunate. We know we need to do it. We don't have the resources. So that's kind of where we stand right now. If we go to the next slide, we can talk about kind of what that means for us in Minnesota. So I've talked about how we're off standard, but I want to stress that like being off standard doesn't mean it's not functional. We have a very well functioning endpoint right now. We, in the last 6 months, it has successfully processed 16 million messages. It is responsible for over 96% of the immunizations added to our system. And we have over 124 interfaces providing messages for over 6,000 physical locations using this off-standard endpoint. So just to make that point again, like off-standard does not mean it's not working, but we agree we're off-standard. We know we need to fix it. And some of the problems with being off-standard is that like we have no interjurisdictional exchange using HL7 because everyone, all of the jurisdictions are off a little bit on their own and nobody has the resources to get on standard. So we're struggling to connect with each other. We know that that's on us. We need to fix it. We're just trying to figure out how to do that. Same thing with federal agencies. So the Veterans Affairs, Department of Defense, they're new partners in the game. They expect to use the standard and use it properly. We're not ready for that. We can't connect with them. We need to make changes. One other problem that being off standard now sort of causes for us is everyone we have onboarded and everybody we continue to onboard, we know we will have to onboard again. So it's like we're creating a duplicative work. We know that the work we're doing right now, we will have to redo once we get the new endpoint up. So we don't love it, but it's kind of where we're at. It's kind of what we have to do. So if we go to the next slide, talk about some recommendations. So how does this all apply to you guys? Why do you care about this story of what we've done, what's been going on in Minnesota? I would really suggest that you don't certify software, but you certify use of systems. In this day and age, there are so many microservices and interface engines and data intermediaries and things that are between the actual systems in use that I think it's kind of a miss to say, does your system have the capability to do this or not and move forward from there? Because I could have a system with capability and three things in between that ruin the message, or vice versa. I could have a system with no capability, but have an interesting little interface engine that makes it work properly to everyone who interacts with it. So just really being careful not to certify software. I think that's something we learned from meaningful use. leverage existing testing programs. So I thought Mary Beth was going to go first and you were going to have some of this background, but she's up next. So there is a very strong immunization testing program in place. And I really think you guys should look at how do we use this to do our certification. You're going to have better buy-in from people. We have a huge amount of participation in it already. I'm not going to spoil Mary Beth's presentation, but I really think focus on leveraging that. There needs to be some kind of funding to make these changes. So again, like we know the problems we have, we want to make the changes. We have no resources to get on standards. We would fail certification today if you certified us in Minnesota, even though we have a very effective endpoint. And there's ripple effects. So as we make changes in our systems, you know, expect slow but steady improvement because we have to work with our partners to make sure the changes we make don't break things that are already in place. So we're interested in doing the work. We want to do the work. We see the value, but there is repercussions to doing the work. So make sure that kind of set our expectations there.
And fantastic. That is great. Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you.
And now we will transition over to Mary Beth to talk about the work that's been done to better align immunization standards. So Mary Beth, over to you.
All right. Thanks very much. Can you hear me okay?
We gotcha.
Great. All right. So thanks so much for the opportunity to share some information with you today. For those of you who aren't familiar with ERA, we're an association that supports IIS and promotes the use of immunization information when and where it's needed. So I'm going to start off by sharing a little bit about the current state of IIS and then move to some thoughts about public health measurement generally. So on the next slide, I'll just talk a little bit about our measurement process. So in collaboration with CDC, ERA began measuring IIS way back in 2015. And the goals of this process were really twofold: to test IIS alignment with standards and then provide IIS with information and assistance that they could use to make improvements and needed enhancements. So we really use two methods to do our testing. We connect with and send test messages to pre-production IIS systems. And then we also extract de-identified data and analyze that for data quality purposes. We work really closely with NIST on developing our tooling. And we have an advisory body that oversees our work made up of NIST, CDC, IIS, and immunization program staff, technology partners who really influence and inform this work. And then we also send everything we do out for community review. So on the next slide, I'll talk about the engagement that Aaron mentioned. So we've got great participation across the country, particularly considering that this whole effort is voluntary. So the map shows in green all of the jurisdictions that have been tested in at least one content area in the last 12 months. So 60 out of 61 IIS have been tested in the last year. And when we built the M&I program, we knew we needed to measure at the implementation level. So we're measuring IIS programs and their ability to meet the CDC functional standards. And the technology system that supports that is really just one component of all of that. And then I just want to say a little bit about the landscape of IIS. We currently have multiple platforms and vendors that support IIS across the country, but there really are just two commercial off-the-shelf systems that are in use in about half the IIS across the country. About 32 jurisdictions use these two commercial off-the-shelf products. The rest of the jurisdictions either use locally developed systems or they use a public domain system that was developed way back in the late 90s by the state of Wisconsin, and that's customized by each state. So on the next slide, I just want to give a quick glimpse of the ART tool that Aaron mentioned. So this is the aggregate analysis reporting tool, and this is how we make all of our test results and test cases and expected and actual outcomes visible to all of our participants. So next slide, I'm going to show an at-a-glance diagram of how each content area moves through our measurement stages. So on the left-hand column, you'll see all the content areas we measure. And the ones that map most closely with the F1 criteria are submission acknowledgement and query response. And then as you move across the diagram from left to right, the stages of measurement get increasingly more formalized. And it really culminates with what we call validation, which is in some ways a parallel with the concept of certification. But this is where we publish the results for not just the community to see, but also all of our IIS partners and funders to know that our systems are meeting expected standards. So on the next slide, I'll give a glimpse of the progress that we've seen. And this graph shows improvements from quarter two of 2017 through quarter two of 2022. That green bar displays the IFs that are measured, and the multiple colored lines show distinct concepts that we measure, and like the ability for an IS to accept a well-formatted VXU or update message. That blue line at the bottom, that's just a little lower than the rest, shows, I think, an important gap and where we have room to improve. And that is where IS return fully standardized acknowledgement messages to their EHR partners. And this we know is really critical for data quality purposes. And I just want to take a second to call out a couple important points here. One is that we know there are some areas where IS diverge from standards because of policy and law in their jurisdictions, and they've got to perform a certain way to meet their own policy and law. And then the other piece I just want to call out is a bit of a shout out for our IS partners, because a lot of this improvement that you see over the last 2 years really took place while programs were responding to the COVID-19 pandemic, which I think shows the IS community's commitment to continuing standardization, even in the midst of an emergency response. So next slide shows a similar view, but this one is around query and response. So again, that green bar displays the number of IS measured, and then the colored lines show distinct query measures. And again, that gray line that's at the bottom is where we see another gap, and that is IS sending back a fully standardized response message. So again, we see improvements year over year from a trend line, but we know we have room to improve in getting that response message compliance back up where it needs to be. Okay, so next slide, I just go back to that overall at a glance graphic. I just want to mention that we did meet with our advisory work group just last month to really look at where do we go next now that a lot of these are already in validation. And we did some prioritization with the topics that are down in that bottom left corner. So what is up next in the queue is measuring provider participation, patient matching, patient saturation, vaccine matching, and onboarding. And so we're working on getting those ramped up over the next year or so in collaboration with the community. So next slide, I'll just take a moment to mention one other program that ERA leads that is likely familiar to many of you, and that is the Immunization Integration Program, or IIP. This is a CDC-funded collaboration with HIMSS, Drummond, and a few other partners that offers an alternative option for ONC F1 testing for EHRs. And this one tests more key immunization-focused capabilities. And then IIP also coordinates a collaborative forum to develop recommendations around solutions to improve EHR IS interoperability. So on the next slide, it provides just a quick graphic of our overall vision with this, and that is through testing both EHRs and IS, or, you know, as Arian mentioned at the start, the pitchers and catchers of immunization data, if you will, we can much more quickly pinpoint challenges for interoperability. And we can use this pipeline approach to then funnel some of the solutions that the IIP group comes up with into testing both for EHRs and for IS. And we feel like this level of detail testing is especially important because given the maturity of immunization interoperability, we've really already harvested the low-hanging fruit. Between certification of EHRs and validation of IS systems, we've seen great improvements, which is why literally millions of submission and query messages are flowing every day. And that's not to say that there's not still room for improvement by any means, but the improvements are going to take detailed testing and, in some cases, as Arian mentioned, really close coordination between interface partners to make sure that in promoting standards, we're not actually breaking existing interfaces, especially now when we're still in the midst of the COVID response. We've got monkeypox right behind it. You know, we're heading into sort of a new level of polio response. So there's lots of reasons to make sure we're not interrupting interfaces that are working right now. So to just hit some summary points, our recommendations would be to consider testing implemented systems rather than vendor products, as Arian mentioned, just to make sure we're getting at the use piece of all this. Build on the test cases and processes already in place, involve and engage the public health community in this whole process, really consider the role of state law and policy and how it influences interoperability. And then I guess lastly, just allowing adequate time and providing funding for making these changes and really seeing progress, because we know this isn't an overnight fix. So with that, I will stop and happy to take any questions.
Fantastic. I think we're going to go to a panel Q&A. So Jillian, I'm going to turn it over to you. The really amazing presentations, really appreciate everything. Jillian, as we turn it over to you, I'm going to actually insert my hand.
By all means, go ahead.
All right, I have 10,000 questions, so I apologize in advance. Hans, maybe a follow-up on vaccine terminology. So, you know, my understanding is the F criteria primarily validate the immunization HL7 message. We don't have criteria for getting a CVX update. Is that right?
If you mean with CVS update in an automated fashion, no, it's focusing on the criterion is focusing on the actual transaction, the VXU transactions.
Got it. Perfect. And then
with the right terminology included to
with the right terminology. That's right. So the test method actually tests with a precondition that you've actually got the right terminology. And I'd imagine there's some variation in the field as to whether you've got the right terminology. And you're mentioning, you know, if I update the IIS and EHR on to use the latest terminology off cycle, I could be in the position where the immunization registry does not recognize the vaccine message that I'm sending over because it, you know, it fails a basic terminology check, right?
That potential is there. But off-cycle at this point in time really means continuous because as we've seen, particularly with COVID right now, codes are coming at times fast and furious that everybody is getting their respective systems up to date with. So is there that potential? Yes. I would look at Mary Beth to see whether it's actually rising to the top of major issues. We have not heard that is currently at this point in time a major issue that they are that they're out of sync on being on the latest and most current.
Yeah, and Hans, as you mentioned, it's because everyone's updating all the time, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Different cadence than that environment was used to, because of codes becoming available before the vaccines are actually already available, and that's part in order to make sure that when they become available, that everybody's up and running and can immediately start to utilize them. So there's a shift that has occurred.
Gotcha. Yeah, and just to jump into that too, we are launching a project right now to look at code set implementation and to try to streamline that a little bit and really make sure we're collaborating across not just EHRs and IIS, but HIEs as well, to make sure everyone has the correct code sets in place as quickly as possible.
Yeah, where I'm going down is whether there's a missing certification, you know, element of querying a terminology server and getting an update or at least validating as part of the test method that you can get. You can demonstrate that you've updated your terminology set.
I'm going to quickly just jump in if you don't mind it, just
please.
To follow up on some of the comment and wondering about the use of those NIST of the NIST tools for certification or validation for both data quality and syntax, and perhaps you could comment on what you've learned there.
Is the question directly to me or Mary Beth or either one of us?
Either one of you.
Okay. NIST tools are focusing on adherence of the EHR side to the message that it's coming across with the minimally required data, which purposely using that because it does not test for everything that can come across necessarily, and with a certain set of test data. So that's what it tests against there. So there is, if there are optional fields that are used by a particular IIS registry, but not by another, NIST may not pick them up depending on how they're defined in the standard to be required or must support or required if empty or et cetera, when valued, et cetera. So there are a variety of different things that they would not pick up that in a implementation otherwise would start to come up because of the variations that start to exist between what is certified and what is actually used.
Yeah, I would support what Hans said, and I think it really doesn't get into the vocabulary question that was raised about code sets.
Jillian, I really do have a long list of questions, so I'm more than happy to yield and then reinsert myself back at the back of the list.
Okay, Bryant.
Great, and mine might dive into the weeds a little bit on that point, Arian. My question was around the Aaron, you mentioned that you're off standard, and I'm curious if you could disclose or confess when you say that you're not compliant with the HL7 standard. Is that you've implemented within the standard? It's just not constrained to the implementation guide itself, because I think that's we need to be very careful that we're properly designating that things can be standard but still not be exactly the same, and it's because of variations in interpretations of implementation guides or optional components within implementation guides that you may have executed that others didn't. If you could talk a little bit about that. And then I put a comment in the chat about, I totally agree, vocabulary standards, especially as vaccines are coming out fast and furious, need to be updated in a timely manner. And this may be a recommendation that we need to make, not to ONC, but to CDC, that it needs resources to keep those reference vocabulary tables up to date. And yeah, Mary Beth, so I was working with them on that. Good.
Yeah, I'll jump in on the first question you had about my comments on being off standard. So, I think because we were early adopters and because the implementation guide had some maybe not as concrete language as it could, there were places where the guide itself was just not like razor's edge clear of like, this is exactly how this should work in every scenario. So we made some assumptions that then the rest of the community decided were not the right assumptions. And so so we were off standard on how the rest of the community is using the guide in some places, but in other places there were just parts where we got it wrong. Like, so we send the wrong code in some certain scenarios and we need to fix that. And so there, it's kind of a mixed bag of, use of the standard will drive better definition of the standard, will drive kind of a lot of people needing to change their systems to meet the new standard. But also, it's a really complicated document. It's a 410-page, very technical document. And we just got it wrong in a couple of spots. Again, mostly because we didn't have great tools for figuring out if we had it right. And now that we do, everything that we build going forward, we can run against, the NIST tool or preferably ERA's testing tool, and we can figure out, are we on standard? Are we off standard? Okay, let's fix that before we even roll it out. So like testing, validation-based development rather than going back and fixing things that already exist.
Thank you.
All right. So maybe first of all, just definitionally, the NIST tool checks HL7 syntax. I think we've heard it does not check data semantics. We have recommended transport standards. Do we have a certification guide that packages transport and associated test methods that package both transport and content?
Not specifically, but Maribeth, you may want to address the work that's happened to a further align on transport, although I'm not sure that it's everybody is totally aligned yet.
Yeah, we actually test transport. That was our very first content area, and it's not specified necessarily in the certification criteria or F1, but the IS community in collaboration with CDC actually selected SOAP Web Services and use of the CDC WSDL as our preferred standard. So we do test for that. And we've seen a lot of improvement and alignment. There are a couple places where HIEs stand in the middle and mandate a different kind of transport. But for the most part, I think the community is in pretty well alignment with that.
I was part of the CDC task force that that made that recommendation, which was back, I believe, in 2011.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So we're 11 years on and we still don't have a consolidated set of certification criteria that include content and transport. And then just want to dive into this question of needed variation that is jurisdictional. What's an example? Maybe I can ask, what's an example of jurisdictional variation in data? And really just sort of probing for this notion of, can we certify to a floor such that ceiling implementations are compliant with the standard and implementation guide? And then also, Hans, just interested in your question about, are there other places where we can put that jurisdictional variation and maybe expand this notion of using ECR because or improving the standard itself if there's necessary contextual information associated with a vaccine that isn't being carried in the vaccine message itself.
So I'm going to address, I think, your first question and ask some of my public health partners to chime in. But I think in terms of variation, you know, I know, for example, that, you know, Washington State has a recently enacted law that mandates an very, very sensitive level of granularity in terms of collecting race and ethnicity. And how is that going to be, you know, captured within, you know, immunization systems and within the transport method? There are other laws in place in other jurisdictions that are around opt-in and opt-out. I don't know if Bryant or Steve would want to speak to additional legal requirements or that are jurisdictionally based.
Yeah, I'll just caveat that, you know, it's our State Board of Health has enacted a law that goes into effect the first of the year, 2023, that requires race and ethnicity at a very granular level, a level that exceeds, you know, current federal requirements. And it, you know, we recognized early on in the pandemic that we weren't able to identify disparities because of the lack of granularity in the current reporting systems that EHR systems were able to collect. So we're enacting that. That the challenge is going to be that, you know, we're a little, you know, Washington is a little bit out ahead of the curve. You know, we got hit by the pandemic first. We've pivoted and adjusted first. If we're held to the national floor, we're not going to be able to make that adjustment. So yeah. I'm hopeful that optional components like sending along data sets that are different perhaps than the rest of the country is asking for is still an allowable variance for those providers who reside within our state.
That's actually an interesting area where you can establish a floor and allow for a ceiling at the same time because the existing set is the OMB set that, but the code set is the CDC set. And the code set, as long as you're selecting your additional granularity for race ethnicity coding, you should be able to fit the implementation guide. Hans, just, you know, you've been exposed to multiple systems in multiple jurisdictions. I'm interested in this question of, is there a way that we can certify to a floor that allows for jurisdictional ceilings to be raised?
Generally, that should be possible. But the question is how it's done and how do the standards support that in a workable way. So some of the examples that Jillian and Brian mentioned, whether it's extended data, demographic data, whether it is health screening results that one may have particular ones that are looking for, other ones don't, or therapeutic interventions. We have some funding sources using OBXs that may not be acceptable by some, or they reject it with a not accepted. I think it is a mix then of Not only what are those differences, but how does the standard support that? And is in all of those areas, is it clear that that vocabulary are extensible? And in some of them, they are not necessarily as clearly defined. The OMB categories are fairly clear. Those are the five. But then you have the race and ethnicity, where you have lists that are much more detailed. To what extent can you extend them? Is the standard clear enough around that? And how do you then accommodate that? So I think we would have to look at the combination of things so that that can work appropriately. Then you have the other part of is that if something is optional in the standard that might be extended upon and used as additional attributes, how do you make sure that there is clarity, that there is a high probability, or that these 5 out of 50 or whatever it is actually using it, so that it behooves you to start to implement those and do so consistently? Because once a field is optional in a standard, the way that Washington goes about it versus Texas versus New York for that field, there is no agreed to standard specifically because it's optional, and everybody can have a reasonable standards compliant way to then approach that. So how can we coordinate so that that field that is being chosen by one is not going to be chosen by somebody else for a slightly different purpose? That's the kind of work we have to go through.
The ideal state here would be one where the certified system can send a message that the IAS can understand, even if it doesn't contain all of the jurisdictionally specific data, while the actors work on adding information. And then I'm also just interested in this question of some of the stuff that is jurisdictionally variation. Is there a need to update the standard to make sure that it can handle that data in a more standard way? So whether it's, and Hans, it sounded like maybe some safety information is being carried in vaccine messages. We've got a theme of more granular race ethnicity. We've got a theme of being able to handle state-based consent rules or redisclosure rules to update IASs. You know, where are the themes of variation? And that might be an interesting homework assignment to make sure that we can call out where those themes of variation in implementation practice exist.
Yeah, and that was where the comment with the ECR example comes in mind. We have different data streams, but there is some of the data streams, particularly right now, are starting to include some of that context that is not necessarily specific to that individual vaccine, but that could already be shared or is being shared through other channels. But at the same point in time, how are they connected? How can we take advantage of it, et cetera? That might also ease some of those challenges, but it needs us to rethink in certain areas of what's the balance of data flows to make that happen. Are we ready for that? Or is it still the easiest path of just adding to the vaccine administration messages?
Gotcha.
And that's part of the challenge, because then you can create much wider variations more quickly.
And Mary Beth, it sounds like we're making improvements in query retrieve, but would it be safe to say that right now the bulk of messages are update only, or what's the percentage?
No, I think the last data we have available, which is 2020, showed that out of the, I think it's around 125,000 active interfaces, HL7 interfaces that are in place, about 65% were bidirectional, meaning they were able to query and submit data. And we know that's going to be higher now. We've seen huge improvements with during the COVID response. So we're anxious to get more recent data, but we know it's well over half at this point.
That's fantastic.
Well, in Minnesota, 80% of our real-time messages are query messages.
That again, truly fantastic. This is one of those never waste a crisis moments where Nothing gets us to improve these systems that theoretically we should be improving, like a crisis.
Aaron, I wanted to go back to something I think I picked up on, which was about the work that CDC may have played in developing some of these standards. And I was wondering if you were part of that role you mentioned, like back in 2011 when some of this work was initiated.
That's right. So CDC established an ad hoc task force that was it was a two-day seminar where we had members of of Stilts and members of IIS systems vendors, as well as some technology experts, to look at where we should establish standards on the transport side. That task force made a recommendation. You know, we evaluated use of direct, use of HTTP post, use of a RESTful transaction, and use of SOAP. At the time, we made a recommendation that we should align on a single SOAP transport standard, which from a technology perspective is a little old fashioned, but it's also very standard. Out of that recommendation, CDC made put together an implementation guide with an associated WSDL to carry the HL7 content via a fairly simple SOAP message. And Mary Beth, I'd just be interested in the prevalence of immunization of IISs nationwide that are compliant to that implementation guide.
Yeah, nearly all of them at this point. And as I mentioned, there are a couple where an HIE stands in the middle of those messages and mandates their own form of transport. But I think at this point, we've just got a handful of sites that aren't actually, that haven't yet implemented the SOAP and CDC WSDL for transport.
Perfect. Awesome. So you know, having a certification criteria would just be enshrining usual practice and might help in some of the intermediary actors that aren't currently compliant.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right, Jillian, I think I've trained my questions.
Okay, and in the few minutes we have left, I wanted to raise what I'm seeing in the chat as well as that was made during the presentations about certifying the use of systems, not the systems themselves. And if anybody would like to comment on that.
Yeah, that's this, Hans, that's a very interesting approach. And I think that in principle, because of the variations, that would make a lot of sense. At the same point in time, the less we can certify and the greatest amount of consistency we can get from that, therefore impacting the least amount of providers, organizations, and other systems, organizations that use them, the better it is. So, and that is related to the word use. So what can we do? And some of that, I think, with the programs that you see have started to be addressed to get that consistency, no matter how many parties sit in the middle, the more we can get there, the better it is, because then the fewer amount of parts need to be examined and that are critical. The more that we're going to go, and because of the variations that we have, the more that we need to do that, it's just harder to scale. It is harder to do. So it is extra effort. I'm not saying that might not be necessary, but where possible, we should try to focus on the least amount of critical points to test and certify, rather than everything, because that is many more looking at the variety of IIS registries, as well as the providers that are connecting with it and the pharmacies and et cetera. So how can we streamline that? So it's more a concern of volume than it's a concern with principle.
Yeah, and this is Aaron from Minnesota. So I just want to hop in though and say that, like, what you are saying certification means will vary greatly on what you're measuring. So again, we found this with meaningful use, where a lot of providers had 2015 certified EHR technology. That said, our system can do this, we're certified, but in use, in practice, they could not generate a standard message that met mm-hmm. the IG. And so if the goal of certification is to say, this system has the capability, whether or not it's used, I don't know. I mean, yeah, that's easy to do. If the goal is to say, the community is using their systems to meet this standard, it's just a very different thing. So it kind of depends on what you want certification to mean, where you measure and what you measure.
And I think part of that, currently as it's starting to be rolled out, real world testing has an opportunity to address that concern further, of it is one thing completely agreed what is tested, and then you have what is used based on a variety of implementation. The intent behind that is to close that loop further so that there is that consistency there that you would expect. And, okay. And but balancing that should be looked at and going to the next step and certifying every use of it, which could very quickly then translate in every connection between a provider and an IIS, is that what does certification then mean? Is it an onboarding validation? Is it a certification? Otherwise, what is involved in that? Because now we're talking a much higher volume of connections to be validated. How can we make that as efficient and proactive as possible?
Well, and just to jump in,
I'm going to give you the final word before I switch it over to Arian to walk us through the new.
Thanks, Julian. Thank you. And I'm just going to sort of provide a really simple phrase that we started saying early on when we started measuring. And that was really looking at the difference between can you do it? Do you do it? Do you do it well? And we're really pushing for do you do it well? Like getting at the quality and content of that interface. And I really think if we're going to make this meaningful, that's where it needs to be. And I think we're also lucky to have a finite number of public health jurisdictions that we're measuring. So that helps too. We have a defined denominator. But I really think that that's where we're going to get the most bang for our buck in improving interoperability and data exchange.
If I can summarize maybe this dialogue between Hans and Mary Beth, it is we want certification to cleanly associate with can do it well in practice. And right now, those two things are decoupled, right? Yeah, perfect. Thank you. And Mary Beth, fantastic document on the variation. What I'm seeing, you know, super quick perusal, what I'm seeing is a fair amount of variation in opt-in, opt-out or privacy handling, a fair amount of variation in additional stock and inventory data that may be required that feels like that could be an update to systems. And then not in that document, but something to mention is making sure that the implementation guide addresses the ability to add more codes than the OMB 5 as long as they conform to the CDC set, right? Perfect. Thank you. All right. This is fantastic.
I want to thank all of our panelists. That was really excellent presentations and stimulating discussion. So thank you very much. I'm going to turn it over to Arian now. He's going to walk us through worksheet tools that we'll be using to move this work further ahead. Arian?
All right. So anybody who has been through, who was part of the last work group that Stephen Lane and I facilitated, this actually aligns with the public health, the last public health data systems task force and how we collected input. I've referred to this lovingly as the stone soup method for recommendations writing. Is a practice of continuously collecting the feedback out of these panels and out of our deliberation in written feedback memorialized in a shared document that we then joint edit and get to crisp recommendations letter. So we've created a default form. We can stick to this, or in the past we've added additional information over time, but within those same basic fields. Again, that same notion of having a minimum standard and then some variation on top of it. So Brenda, I think you've got the rubric that we're gonna be collecting data into.
Yes, let me get that screen put up now.
Thank you. And I was sharing with Jillian that in the old days, I actually refer to this as the Mickey method because Mickey Tripathi led a work group on the JSON report that called for APIs in healthcare. He co-led that with David McCallie. We heard, you know, a ton of testimony, a lot of deliberation. And then, you know, we literally sort of handcrafted the recommendations text. And so I used to go off and when I co-chaired things, do the same thing, listen to all the testimony, and then, you know, spend a day basically writing the recommendations and then reviewing it. And the stone soup method is far superior to that method, at least for my my typing. So what we want is for you to go as you hear content that you think we should start to memorialize in recommendations. If you can go into this worksheet, which we will share with all of you, and it's a Google Docs worksheet. First tag, yourself, just so we know who to go back to get clarification. What we're really looking to do is grab some topics. So I think we've established this against the F criteria. If there are things that are off that criteria, you know, maybe we should add another category or separate category. Mostly what we're looking for is adding your textual observations, and then to the extent that you're able to, formalizing that as a recommendations text. But it's a recommendations text that we will do joint editing for. And to get you if you ever do want to write recommendations, to get you into the right frame for writing recommendations, the practice that is helpful is to start every sentence with "we recommend that ONC," and then blah, right? It's very easy to write recommendations from the perspective of an ideal state of the world. You know, it would be nice if all systems could blah, 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 blah. Our recommendations are to the national coordinator. They are not recommendations to CDC or CMS, even though we're lucky enough to have representatives from CDC and CMS on this task force. In areas where there's coordination that's required between ONC and CDC, or ONC and STILTS, or ONC and CMS, the right way to write that is we recommend that ONC coordinate with, you know, the respective other organizations in order to So just keep that in mind that it's most helpful if we are recommending that ONC do something specific, recommend that ONC is the actor. That also gets you in the right frame of thinking, if you were the national coordinator, how could you affect the change that you're looking for? Because again, it's easy to think about the right state of the world and surprisingly hard to think about the policy levers that drive the right state of the world. So I'm going to pop, but in most cases, you should be first filling out your observations or, you know, fuzzy recommendations. Feel free to put those into the observation section. And then if you can, with extra credit, go ahead and see if you can frame up formalized recommendations. As we go over this process, we will be not changing the work in the observations column, but we will be jointly editing and refining the work in the recommendations. And then if there's white papers or supplemental material, such as Mary Beth just dropped in terms of variation in IISs, that goes into column D. So first of all, any questions on how we're proceeding in terms of collecting feedback and use of this tool? Jamie.
Yeah, hey, good morning, everyone. Thanks for the introduction to the tool, Arian. This makes a lot of sense to me. And I had just like a recommendation procedurally about the spreadsheet here. My guess is that as we move forward, many of us are going to have similar ideas. And often when there are groupware opportunities like this to share ideas or develop them, there'll be sort of like an opportunity for participants to like comment on or advocate for one of the ideas or recommendations in this case that others have put there. So I'm wondering if we could add a column or two that might allow others to say, like, yes, I endorse this idea, or this one sounds good to me, or maybe even to say, yes, I endorse it with a modifier. And that might reduce your effort to have to aggregate them later if they sound similar.
Thank you for that. So what I'd recommend there, first of all, is before you add a row, make sure you review the rows that are already in the spreadsheet. And then if you want to endorse or modify or add additional context, just go ahead and edit, add to the observations cell for that row, so that we consolidate observations or additional context to the extent possible in the same row. Jamie, thank you for that. Now, clearly, if it is a brand new topic and, you know, in informatics, we have the great separation between the lumpers and the splitters. And so, you know, your context of being the same or different may be different from mine. But to the extent that it is a truly different one, feel free to add an additional row, and we may end up going over time and, you know, pulling out some of the observations and carrying them into their own roles, rows, so that they get memorialized as different recommendations. But Jamie, thank you for that.
Were you also thinking about adding an additional column for endorsement or as well, Jamie, or was that specific?
My thought is that the number of panelists that endorse or feel that a recommendation is very strong or optimal might be data to suggest that it's worth promoting more strongly to ONC or calling it to light with other parties. So yeah, that's what I was thinking. So in addition to modifying it or adding context, there might just be an opportunity to note that one or more panelists endorses one of the recommendations somebody else dreamed up.
In practice, that hasn't been an issue. So when we've gotten to discussion sections, it's been pretty clear that we have general panel endorsement. As I said, I'd recommend just using the observations cell to add your plus one or your endorsement as a way to facilitate that. Let's try that and see if that gets us where we're going, and if we need to add, you know, an endorsements column, we can, if we feel that that's going to be critical. As I said, in the history that we've done this and followed this practice, it hasn't been an issue in practice, because it's generally been pretty obvious which topics have general endorsement and move forward. And, you know, the chairs tend to help facilitate some of that. Ike, you have a question. Ike, you're on mute.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
Just to add on to the concept of using that single column, it really is helpful when we're going to assemble it, because often an endorsement is an endorsement plus a little extra comment, and putting it into two comments kind of makes it difficult to follow. Looking at supporting a comment above, it is helpful, however, to note whose perspective you're supporting, just to keep track of it. So if it's, I agree with Ike, or I agree with Arian or whatever, as you're making comments further down. So just in case something get dot inserted in a line between, that there's a good internal reference within that cell. But I agree with Arian that using a single cell or single column is probably best, at least for now.
Yep, and as noted, just tag all those comments with your name so that we can accommodate multiple commenters in the same field. All right, we made pretty quick work through all of that. Any other questions on the worksheet as a whole? So with that, I'd like to assign homework for the task force members to familiarize yourself with the worksheet take your observations and notes and memorialize them as observations that could be turned into recommendations for the IIS and vaccine F criteria. Any questions on that? I'm already seeing some wonderful observation text in the chat itself. So feel free to copy and paste your own incredible comments. And I know that we for the stuff that's tracked to everybody, we keep those as part of the public record as well. So they become part of the annotations for this work group. Those also serve as a fantastic frame. And then once we have the transcripts out of these meetings, that can also be a helpful frame to go search through and mine for good observations. All right. So Brent, go ahead. Brian, go ahead.
Just a quick technology process. And it's probably just because I'm on an agency issued laptop. It's not allowing me to copy content from the chat. Is anybody else able to?
Yeah. This may well be data loss prevention or, so we definitely have issues using this format of you may have data loss prevention or, other kinds of controls that limit your access to Google Docs. You may need to work with your local IT organization or DSEC organization.
Not in the Google Docs. I've got a workaround for that. I'm talking in the Zoom. You said
got it.
There's some great ideas in the chat. Hopefully somebody with authorization
can
capture those because I'm not able to.
No, thank you for that. I'm not sure what controls we have under the chat that prevent people from copying and pasting the chat comments, but the ones that go to everybody do become part of the public record. And so we can take those chat method, that chat content and make it available. Maybe I'll ask the ONC team the method that we can pull that content out, or the Excel team how we can pull that content out.
Yeah, Arian, we could
and Rachel just
we could copy the chat for the task force members and send it along to anyone who can't copy it.
Perfect. Thank you. I think all of us are having the same issue of being able to select the text but not be able to copy it. Cool. Any other questions? Or comments? All right, having gone through a really efficient panel session, having gotten some homework, wonder whether it's time to go to public comment and give ourselves back a little bit of time. Jillian, any other feedback or comments that you have?
Yep, that's good.
All right.
So before we go to public comment, I just wanted to suggest the co-chairs. We have a couple members that weren't able to make it during our first meeting, but are here today, Bryant and Eliel, who haven't had a chance to introduce themselves to the rest of the task force members. And if you want to give them, 20 seconds to introduce themselves more formally.
Please. So first Bryant and then Eliel.
Thank you. I know many of the folks on this call from a previous instantiation of the task force. I'm Dr. Bryant Thomas-Karras. I'm the Chief Medical Informatics Officer for Washington State Department of Health. Been in state service for over 22 years and I'm both a physician, biomedical engineer, and a NIH NLM trained medical informatician. Looking forward to working with you all on this fast and furious endeavor.
All right, and Eliel.
Hey, everyone. Good morning. My name is Eliel Oliveira. I am the Director of Research and Innovation at the Dell Medical School in Austin. I also serve on HITECH, and I have been in the field for a bit over 20 years. I was previously the Chief Information Officer for the Louisiana Public Health Institute. And I do support health information exchange in Central Texas, as I did in Louisiana. So also in New Orleans. A pleasure to be part of this group. Thank you.
All right. Thank you both. And we're going to now open up our meeting for any public comments. If you're on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function, which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you're on the phone only, press *9 to raise your hand, and once called upon, press *6 to mute and unmute your line. So let's pause to see if anyone raises their hand. In the meantime, just want to remind everyone that our next task force meeting is next Friday, not Wednesday, but Friday, and that is the 9th. We had to pick an alternate date because we have another high-tech subcommittee meeting on next Wednesday, and we can't do two meetings at the same time. So anyways, just want to remind people about that. Also that the materials for today's meeting can always be found on healthit.gov on the high-tech calendar. Not seeing any hands raised, and so I will turn it back to Arian and Jillian.
Just maybe a reminder to do your homework. We'll send you an email reminder to do your homework as well. But boy, I want to thank the presenters for some truly amazing and helpful feedback and comment. It's pretty apparent that we have learned a ton. It is a credit to all the work that went into the current state of immunization information systems and EHR certification that we were able to track vaccine administration. I think it's fair to say that during the process, it was, it was not characterized by no special effort. There was a fair amount of special effort that went into making it happen, but it was at least possible, which, as I said, is a credit to how far we came in the last 10 years. As we go forward in certification, let's make sure that our recommendations text makes sure that the next EHR that gets implemented in the next STILT jurisdiction is switched on by default to send vaccine administration data and to query for immunization records by default with no special effort. Jillian?
Yeah, I think I'll just add to that to thank everybody again for their engagement and participation. I personally am like looking forward to having a chance to digest all of the comments in the chat and perhaps even listen to the meeting again, because there was a lot of really interesting content and issues raised. I think for me, one of the things that still continues to stand out is the need to develop specific tools around to address data quality. And it seems like there are a lot of lessons that have been learned with the work that ERA has done. So I really look forward to continuing this conversation. And I clearly have a lot of homework to do too.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Shall we adjourn early? With no objection, let us get ourselves a little bit of time. Oh, thanks for the reminder on the upcoming meetings. And as a reminder, yes, on Friday, we're meeting it again. Thanks, everybody.